This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
All right, howdy. Here, I'll just do a real short intro. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, and I also made a pretty big deal out of this episode before it came out as a podcast. It's a VO and prod tech roundtable. It was a Google Hangout. The whole point of this was to do something different and also give a visual element because I'm hearing the kids these days. That's what they want on the old internets. But seriously, I really just wanted to start testing out the Google Hangout or tech like that and see if it can be utilized a little better by me as I talk to these great talents. I'm not a fan of Google Hangouts so far. I think it's like a toy. It's like a poorly performing toy at this point. Now I realize if we each had really expensive streaming cameras and our audio equipment set up properly, it would have been a little better. But I don't personally like the way that Google Hangouts works on a professional level. But it's fine. It's free, and it did what it did. Just fine, I suppose. So anyway, be aware, there's a video element to this podcast. It's not originally an audio podcast, so the sound isn't great. You're going to hear some stuff where we make reference to things we're looking at. Jeff Berlin walks around his compound, for example. Steve Sykes leans back and shows us stuff in his studio. So anyway, that is what that is about. If you would like to see it, you are more than welcome to do so. It's posted on my website, on the YouTube, etc., etc. What else to say? It's going to come in two parts. It's going to feature Jeff Berlin and Steve Sykes. Jeff Berlin, amazing voice talent. Steve Sykes, amazing producer. Both of which have backgrounds, though, in both sides of the field. And both of which are extremely tech savvy. And that's the reason I got them. In fact, Jeff Berlin was my second guest on my podcast way back when. And I realized instantly he will be a guy I'm glad to know and I will go to for questions here and there. And I have over the last 4 or 5 years, since I've known him. Steve Sykes, again, I interviewed him quite a while ago. He's a real good guy and just it doesn't matter what question I throw at him. He's excited to answer it. Not like, okay, I guess I'll help the guy out again. It's like, yes, thanks for asking me about, Complete by Native Instruments. I'm going to tell you everything I love. Anyway. So I talked to both of these guys in depth now together about tech as it relates to the VO and Production Pro. And the only real thing I had in the back of my mind, I don't know how clear I made it, but I was sort of gearing this at the independent professional in the business. So the 1099ers out there, those of you that are running your own company and working on your own, rolling solo. So that's who I was sort of gearing it at. But I believe a lot of this will translate just fine into people who actually work inside brick and mortar stations or inside some sort of brick and mortar collective of talents. A big studio with many talents inside. So a lot of people are going to find this interesting. And in fact, we had a number of people watching live. That wasn't really my intention. No, it's fine that people were, but I wasn't worried about how many tuned in live. There were a number of them, and a few had instant critique, which is interesting. So there'll be, definitely some other angles on this tech side of the business to go after in the coming months. And I guess I say that to say, I've learned this. Also, I'll spit it out. Trust me, I'll spit it out. I've learned this over the years now. With almost anything, nothing is certain. Nothing is 100%. Not in life. There's a couple things that are. But anyway, just because a lot of people say this is the way to do it does not mean it's the way to do it. So I think these guys' opinions are great, and I trust what they say 100%. But, just because they say this mic is right for this, or this mic is right for that, or this piece of equipment is needed, or this isn't, blah, blah, blah. Take it with a grain of salt, use lots of sources, and make your own educated decisions based on what you hear. So hopefully this helps you, though. It's the VO Prod Tech Roundtable. This is the audio version. This is part one of two. I hope you enjoy.
The Producers.
And we are live. Hey, guys, we have Jeff Berlin. I don't know, as people are looking at their screen, they should see our little pictures on the bottom. Jeff, you're on my left. I guess wave and say hi.
Hello.
Okay, good. And then Steve Sykes, wave and say hi, although it's pretty obvious which one you are now.
Yeah. I'm the one with not the big, huge, booming voice.
I'm pretty far away from the mic, so if I'm booming now, then I have a problem. But
you are booming now, but you should be booming. You're Jeff Berlin.
I'm the non-voice of God.
My job is to boom.
All right. So okay, cool. This is going to be cool because we've had Jeff. You're actually in. Tell me where you're at again. You're not in your main studio.
No, I had to drive out. I'm in my weekend home on Cape Cod in Wellfleet.
I was going to say to the kids out there, you become the voice of A&E, many a radio station, and the Opie and Anthony channel, amongst others, on Sirius XM. You get a
Grand Theft Auto 5.
Cape Cod. And what?
And Grand Theft Auto 5.
That's right.
Oh,
that's
cool. Actually, I forgot. I might have already told you this, how cool I am to my girlfriend's boys, that I know the guy that's the voice of that, and that I know a couple of the guys that produce the radio stations on that game. That makes me cool.
Well, Brian Apple in particular.
Brian Apple, yeah. Anyway, Steve Sykes now. You are in the St. Louis area, or you got a new house recently, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm in it right now. Yeah, it's a new old house. I'm on the third floor right now. This is my new studio. You can't really see much of it. I mean, you see the back there, but I actually have windows now. My old place, I was in the basement, and it was really depressing. And I said, never again. I need windows. So yeah, I'm up on the third floor now, and yeah, it's cool. It's great. Really comfortable.
Such kindred spirits, because my main studio is in an old house in the
third floor. I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
I can relate.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's definitely a life-changing experience getting out of the depths of darkness and into light.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. So anyway, just to kind of set this up on what I hope to achieve here, it's going to be totally laid back. You guys can, as Jeff's already shown, you can lift the camera up, flip around, show some crap. I know, Steve, yours is more of a desktop.
Yeah.
The point is super loose. We can show what we want to show, but we want to talk tech, and we want to talk tech as it relates to the voice talent and as it relates to the freelance producer. So while people who work in brick-and-mortar radio stations might pull a lot out of this, so that's great, we're kind of gearing it towards the individual and what they can do, you know, on a budget, or what they can do efficiently and how they can make their workflow better and the tools they can use, both on the voiceover side and on the radio imaging production side. Now, Steve, you actually are way more than a radio imaging production guy, but you have a big background in that, and so I'm gonna utilize your brain on that side of it. And then Jeff, again, you've got a strong radio imaging production, you know, audiophile background, but we're gonna utilize you more as the at-home professional voiceover guy. But since you both are so tech savvy, this is why I think there's gonna be a lot of value here. So if you guys are good, I'm gonna dive right in, and I'm gonna start with the topic of microphones. This is something that comes up all the time because you have people that want to know, you know, what is the best microphone. You have people that want to know what's the cheapest microphone that I can get by with. And then you have all the people that want to know everything in the middle. So the point is, let's start on the low end. And maybe Jeff, we'll start with you. People say, what microphone for voiceover can I just get by with? You know, where's sort of the basement? What's your opinion on if there is a basement, and where that basement is?
Not from personal experience. I'd say the basement is the MXL mics from Marshall. I've heard rave reviews about a lot of those, and the price point's like around $100. And I've seen torture tests where there was up against a $2,000 U87, and the difference was indiscernible. But I haven't personally used the MXL mic, so I can't say from personal experience that that's the case. But if I had very little money and was trying to get started, that's where I'd start looking.
Steve, let's go over to you now. Now, obviously, your job, your income comes more from the production side of the business, but you have your hands deep into the world of voiceover with your wife, and then also you're just a talented guy. And So what are your thoughts on this?
I don't have any experience with the mics Jeff talked about either, but I've heard the same that he said. It's hard. People ask these questions, but there's no one size fits all, with these things. There are definitely the cool thing is, like, technology has advanced so much that even the budget gear is really good. It is good enough to broadcast in radio production, on television production. I think the best thing you can do if you're looking for mic is go to a place like Guitar Center or something. And some of these places, some of these locations have rooms that you could go in and try the mics out. Obviously, it's not the most ideal setting because there's going to be people around and stuff, but it'll give you an idea kind of how your voice is going to interact with that particular piece of gear. So you're not going into it blindly because, you know, I'll see a lot of people, they'll buy things just because so-and-so said, you know, oh, this is a great mic. But then they get it in the studio and they're kind of like, eh. And, you know, some of these places you can't really, you know, send it back. And if you can't send it back, it's a hassle. So you might as well just take the time, go somewhere and try a couple out, you know.
I would agree with that, and I wanted to bring up, on that end, there's different kinds of mics without really going too far into, I mean, we could really probably do an entire show on microphones, and we don't want to do that, but when we talk about maybe money isn't as much of an issue, somebody's been doing this a little while, and they want to put a good investment into it, you've got your tube mics, you've got your condenser mics, your dynamic mics, as far as, you know, shotgun mics versus large diaphragm mics. The Sennheiser 416 is one that comes up in the top of or right at the top of the conversation all the time as far as shotgun mics. Then the Neumann TLM-103, that one comes up all the time as far as a diaphragm mic. Jeff, let's go back to you. If the TLM-103,
It's not like cheap as far as price point goes, but it's not like going to kill you either, as you know, on the high end. It's a pretty decent microphone.
Let me throw my two cents into it, and then I'm going to let Jeff, you talk about it a little bit too from the voiceover standpoint. I ended up, you know, when I earned just enough income from voiceover, when I finally realized, okay, I'm okay at this and I'm making, you know, money, I decided to invest in the 416, largely because so many of the big-time talents had used it, and also because it's an extremely forgiving mic. It has good low-end, good high-end, but if you're in a room that's not the best, kind of a loud room or, you know, anyway, it's a very forgiving mic. So that's where I went. Tell me why I was right or wrong to do that, or what are some other options people can do if they have some cash and they want to invest in a mic for voiceover?
Well, the 416s come way down in price. I think I paid $1,400 for my first one, and now I think you can get them for $800. And you're right. They are forgiving, but in a sense they're not as well, because you have to be right on them. The proximity is very specific. You can't be moving around too much when you're on a 416. So if you're a very animated voice person, that might not be the best one for you. You might want to get a large diaphragm mic that can, you know, give you a full cardioid pattern that you can perform in. And I also, when I travel with a 416, and I use a 416 mostly in my whisper room, and I still worry a lot about the acoustic space. And as forgiving as the mic is, if you can set it up so that the acoustics are good, it'll just be that much better. Obviously, we want to, you know, provide as optimum a voice track as we possibly can in all situations. The 416 I think is an excellent mic. It picks everything up. It makes everything sound good. It's smooth. I can't say anything bad about it.
So what?
What do you use? At home. I have a 416.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I have a 416 in my main studio in Melrose. Here on the Cape, I have a Sound Deluxe U99 that I'm using today. That's a tube, large diaphragm microphone that I bought maybe 10 years ago that I love. And last week I was using it, and all of my clients were saying, wow, we like this a lot more. So I don't know what to do.
I remember that mic, Jeff, when I was producing you back in the day. You used that one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it always sounded great. So.
Yeah, it cuts through, you know. And now if you wanted to get a mic like that, I think you'd have to purchase a Bock, because whoever the guy that was doing Sound Deluxe before is now Bock.
The good thing about the 416 is it's really focused. And although sonically it's not my, you know, favorite sound, it's a very EQ-able microphone. So you can kind of make
about that real
you
quick.
Kind of sculpt it into what you want, you know.
You said sonically it's not your favorite sound. Why is that? And you know, explain that. And what would be an example of sonically your favorite sound or something?
I don't know if I really have a favorite, but I don't know. I guess it doesn't have that kind of over the top, larger than life kind of thing going on. It's just very kind of neutral. I guess. I don't know if neutral is exactly the best word to use, but it's just not very big sounding. But no, I mean, I think it's really for its purpose. I mean, the 416, if I'm not mistaken, that's like a, wasn't that like a Foley mic or something, or maybe
ADR? Yeah, it was
It was like in film, like on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
It was never intended for voiceover.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good at like just kind of capturing the sound in a sort of neutral-ish type way. But I don't know if I really have a favorite sound, to be honest. I tend to favor more of the smoother kind of, you know, vintagey sounding type microphones, but that's largely because mostly what I record these days is, you know, music stuff. But for VO, I always like those mics where you talk into it and then it's just like, boom, there it is, you know, and you don't have to do a lot of futzing around with it.
Right. Cool. I think that's great stuff, especially the low end stuff. People are always asking, you know, the starters are always asking, look, I want to do it and I want to do it right, but I ain't got $2,000. So, you know, the MXL that you guys mentioned, or Jeff, you know, that's a good place for people to start. And the fact that the 416 is coming down, and Jeff, it looks like you wanted to say one more thing about this.
Yeah, well, I just have a story about the 416 versus, because Steve, you said it was very EQable, is, you know, I have the two studios and they have a different sound, but I voiced a promo for a TV station here with the U99, and then they had a pickup that I had to do in Melrose on the 416, and I was very carefully comparing the two tracks, and I used Nectar, and I found a setting, and I got the 416 to sound exactly like my U99 here, and there was no discernible difference listening very, very carefully, and they didn't know that I was in a different studio in a different room. So it's like, you're very right, it's very easy to shape microphone.
People say that about the U87 too. I think, which is why a lot of voiceover studios will have a U87 in-house, because that's another one I think that you can sort of sculpt and make it sound however you need it. So they're sort of similar in that sense, although vastly different in terms of, you know, largeness and things like that. But I think both of those microphones are very sculptable.
Let me get you.
They don't sound like incredible, like right out the gate, you know, but you can make them sound pretty decent with some EQ.
Let's move this to the next topic, outboard gear. We have people ask about that, and especially these days with a home studio. You know, what do you need to have? What do you, maybe you want to have, but you don't actually need? Because these days, with everything being done so much more in the box, you know, there are more and more plugins that can do anything you need inside the DAW. First of all, I want your both opinions on preamps, because a lot of people will still invest in a very good preamp, especially when it comes for voiceover. But otherwise, is there any outboard gear that one needs to have? Steve, let's start with you on this one.
I think mic pre is, I think, the most important. You need a way to get the sound into your DAW, you know, in a clean manner. I think that's the number one thing, is you want to get a really, the best you can afford mic preamp. For voiceover, you know, I used to really be into the tube stuff. The problem with that, with voiceover, though, is if, you know, you got to turn that stuff on, it's got to heat up. And if you've got, like, let's say you left your gear off and then you got a client calling, you say, hey, I need this right now. You know, you got to wait for it to warm up, you know, to get that optimal sound. So I actually think if you're doing VO, I think it's better to just stick with, you know, the solid state kind of non-tube stuff, just something that you could turn on and it's ready to roll. Tube is cool, but I nowadays I like that more for musical applications, like recording acoustic guitar and things like that, or warming up like a synthesizer, running, you know, things that we could get crunchy sounding and stuff. But for VO, I would stick with a non-tube preamp if you're looking for just convenience, and they are going to be a little more clean too, the non-tube stuff.
And so. Jeff, you can continue on this. Now, does someone actually need a preamp? I mean, what I mean to say is, if you have an audio interface that gives you clean phantom power, that has a preamp built in, or no? Do you need to have a preamp, or can you just stick your mic directly into the audio interface and start recording in your DAW, whether it be Pro Tools or Audition or a free Reaper or a free alternative? Maybe Jeff, you talk about that.
It depends on the interface. I have Metric Halo ULN2, and the mic pre's in that are so good, they rival the Great River mic pre that I'm using here, that I would use that. My old M-Box had the worst, most crappy preamps I've ever heard, and like a Mackie board has bad preamps. So it really varies. If the preamp is good in your interface, then sure, go ahead and use it. You're using it for convenience. I agree with Steve. You want to get like the best preamp you can get, but it's also like buying a car. It's like, what's better, the Volvo or the Saab? You know, like you can get a Grace, a Millennia, John Hardy. They all make excellent preamps. I've never used any of them. I would love to someday, but I really like the preamps I have now, which are an Avalon M5, and here I have a Great River INV ME. And as a backup, I'll use my ULN2, which will stand up to either one of those.
Yeah, it goes back to the you know, the evolution of technology. Like, the preamps in these interfaces are getting better and better with every new piece of gear that comes out. So I think a lot of times you can get away with just plugging it right into your interface and rolling with that.
So I have a Focusrite Sapphire Pro 24 FireWire interface here, for example. And I have this, I was actually going to bring this up in the mic talk, but it went too long. I have a, hey, we have Jeff on.
We've got two Jeff Berlins.
Two Jeffs. That's weird.
Hey, can you hear me? Because it told me my mic went out.
Yeah, we can hear you. We see you twice, actually. Anyway.
Oh, sorry.
I'll just move on and assume we'll be... Yeah, you see yourself? I'll just move on and assume we're still okay. No, actually.
I love how the frozen Jeff is kind of like scowling.
Yeah, Frozen Jeff isn't happy right now. I have a Focusrite Sapphire, and I'm told the Focusrite preamps are actually very good. So I run my mic directly into that, and anything I apply to my voice ever after that is in Pro Tools, using plugins, audio plugins, software. So what would be wrong with that? Because, you know, I got the Sapphire Pro for, I think, like $250 or something. That's a pretty cheap option. What's wrong with what I just set up there?
I'll answer. Only thing I can think of that might be wrong with that is it makes it harder for you to monitor yourself. If you want to hear immediate feedback in your headphones, when you go into the box, you're immediately introducing latency. So you're probably going to hear yourself on the mic, but you might have a hard time hearing what you're doing further down the road. If you're using outboard gear, it's instant. There's no latency. So you can hear the compression, you can hear the gate, you can hear the EQ in your headphones while you're reading. And personally, I like that. That's the biggest drawback. Other than that, sonically, the end result is very likely to be the same.
Well, and there's also something to be said for convenience. If you've got a really cool sounding outboard chain set up, you could record and go. You don't have to bounce or futz with plugins and things because your audio is being printed ready to roll. So if you spend the time to, you know, get a nice chain put together and tweak it and make it sound really awesome, you know, that's going to speed things up for you. Obviously, the drawback is it's going to print with that whatever settings you have, and if you decide, yeah, I don't really like that, or it's not working for this particular application, you can't take it off, which, you know, there's the benefit of plugins, but I guess you got to kind of weigh the pros and cons to both methods.
I have two things. Jeff, let me ask you this first. When I record voiceover, again, I'm no Jeff Berlin. I know a lot of people, but, you know, I'm pretty good these days. Anyway, I do not have headphones on. I don't do it with headphones. I don't like to record with headphones. I feel like it makes me start getting radio-y. It just makes me start overdoing it. Anyway, why is that a stupid thing I just said? Or do you agree? Is it better not to use headphones when you record voice?
It's case by case. I take the headphones off when I want to sound like Joe Normal. If I'm trying to project some kind of an attitude, the headphones help me. It arguably can be a crutch to wear headphones, apply processing in the headphones, and get that feedback. But some of the reads I'm doing are really understated reads, and it helps bring that out in me. And I find that my reads will be better when I'm wearing the headphones than when I'm not, depending on the kind of read. There's nothing wrong with not wearing headphones. A lot of purists will say that you should never wear headphones, actors is especially. You know, someone acting on a stage obviously isn't wearing headphones.
Sure, sure. And Steve, maybe you could talk about this too, because you just sort of brought it up. Tell me why this is a bad or a good thing. I know a lot of people do this. Voice talents, producers especially that become voice talents are starting to utilize this. But anyway, bypassing outboard gear, but you still want to apply color to your voice going into. So, you know, you turn on plugins and you sort of reverse the aux chain, and you print whatever you want from your EQ or your little compressor or your gate. Yeah. On an internal software plugin,
as you go into the editor. Therefore, as you said, you don't have to deal with bouncing, and you can just apply those on the fly. Why is that a good or a bad technique?
I mean, it's a personal preference thing, really. I mean, and it's also, I think, dependent on application, you know. If you want the freedom to be able to tweak per client, probably the best bet would be to just record your voice in completely dry and clean with nothing going on, and then you create different tracks. And I know, Jeff, you kind of do this, don't you, where you have different settings?
I mean, if you want, I can bring I'm not in my studio right now, but I can show you my setup, but I have a whole bunch of auxiliary tracks, each feeding a different setting to a different track. So in one pass, I hit record. When I'm done, I hit stop. I've instantly created 5 audio files, each one with its own processing setting, including one that's completely clean, so that you, the producer, have your choice. And
you can just export it, right? You don't have to go through the whole real-time bounce. You could just
I just instantiate the record track. I just, you know, record enable it. Sorry, instantiate for plugins, I guess. I just record enable whatever I want to record, whatever setting I want to record. It's all static.
When you come in printing through those plugins, when you're done, you could just export that audio and send it off to your client, right? Without having to wait for it to bounce and
exactly. I highlight it, I rename it, and then export it right away. Yeah. It's already recorded.
There you go.
Much faster.
I think that's a great tip. Jeff, you brought that up when I interviewed you. I think you were my second podcast, actually. So we go way back now. But you brought that up back then, and so I started doing that. So I'll record a couple different filters when I record voiceover, and a lot of stations love that. It's a great tip, and as you say, print whatever you're going to do on the fly, and then you're exporting, and you're not bouncing at the end. I think it's a good tip.
It's really just to save time, because otherwise, if you're going to apply audio suite processing to the track, you're spending a lot of time with each track. And if you're just doing one session a day, maybe that's fine. Some of us are busy.
Room treatment. Let's go to the room. A lot of people like to ask about this, and there's different opinions on what you can, what you can't do, what you shouldn't do on a budget. Money's no issue. Jeff, you mentioned a whisper room. Anyway, let's start with you, because when we were actually talking about this tech roundtable in email, you brought up, Jeff, that you have a lot of opinions on the room, and your opinions have changed over the years. You're a very successful voice talent who records in multiple places, so I put a lot of value into what you have to say about this. So start with maybe what is the bare minimum someone can or should do, and then forget about money, what should we be doing to our room? Where should you be recording your voice in?
Well, I said in the email, I like to record in an anechoic chamber with absolutely no room reflections, completely dead. The reason for that is because you can always add ambience afterwards with reverbs. But you can't take it out once it's in, although there's that new D-Reverb plugin from Isotope RX3, so maybe that is a new possibility. But basically, you're introducing phase cancellations. The slightest room reflection, like a glass surface just inches away from the mic, means that your voice is going to hit the mic, and then it's going to hit it again, like maybe a half a millisecond later. Maybe that's not going to be much of an effect, but 10 milliseconds will create a huge effect, and you could dull the high end and just make your voice sound much more flat, and much, you know, much worse. You just basically want your voice to hit the mic and nothing else. So that's my opinion. I know a lot of, you know, if you're recording drums or other musical instruments, this is not necessarily the case. But for voice, I've always tried to keep it as dead as possible. So what I've done over the years is just add more and more and more sound absorption. My favorite weapon is the Oralex Leonard Bass Trap, which is a giant, you know, 3 square cubic foot cube of foam, and it just absorbs all the mid-range. It's supposed to absorb bass. They call it a bass trap. It really doesn't. It absorbs the mid-range, but that's most of the frequencies in our voice are mid-range. If you want, I'll walk over and I can show you what I got. But I use, I also have a lot of what I'm seeing in Steve's room.
Yeah, please do. Those are
real traps. Yeah, I'll walk over. I just don't know about the Wi-Fi. If I start to drop out, I'll come back.
Okay.
I was in the living room here. This is my pirate radio station operation here. I don't know if you can see it. But I'm heading out. But yeah, that, real traps, Oralex Max Walls.
Where are we going?
Jeff Berlin Cribs Tour here.
Oh, this is my deck. I don't know what you can see. It's in the garage next door.
All right, let's see if we make it.
Jeff, where's your studio? Is it like an outhouse or something? Where are you going?
I think we might have lost him.
I lost you, Ryan. I can't see your video anymore. Oh, there you are.
Oh, okay, good.
Is he back?
Jeff, you back?
Is that live, Jeff, or is that a ghost image from 10 minutes ago? Jeff? Jeff? I don't think.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I hear you.
Well, kind of.
Where is his studio?
I hear you guys. I don't know if you can hear me.
Where are you? Are you back inside or?
I'm over to my studio.
Yeah, I think.
That I have out on Cape Cod.
All right. Well, show us around real quick. We're absolutely losing you. So show us around real quick and then run back in. Hurry up.
All right.
I think this is working out too well.
Yeah, this isn't. Hey, Jeff, I don't know if you can hear us, but why don't you come back inside?
Chamber.
This isn't working out too well. Steve, I'm going to just go back to you here and see if Jeff can hear us that we can't hear him. And why don't you talk about room treatment? You just recently set up a studio where you're focusing more on production. You also
I'll let Jeff focus on the VO side of it. As far as the production standpoint goes, I like things a little bit, you know, livelier. You know, my room is, I can't move my screen around, but, you know, you can see behind me over here, there's some panels. I've got these all over the room. Those are GIK acoustic panels. I've got bass traps, and I've got just the standard, you know, high-end stuff, absorption going on as well. And I had more up before, but I didn't like how, I like a little liveliness, at least for like producing music and things like that. So I don't have this room completely dead. And I actually record vocals in here too. We have a vocal booth downstairs made by vocalbooth.com that we could use, you know, Mel uses it, but I could use it if I wanted a completely dead sound. But I just do it in here because I like the organic kind of live kind of feel to things.
And just to let people know what you're doing, you actually produce music for picture, you produce sound design, you produce a lot of different things, but you also have a jingle product where you're singing. So you record vocalists actually in the room you're in right now.
Yeah. I mean, I do music for media, music and sound design for media. So, you know, I'll record vocals for jingles, but I also record for other things too. And I'll set up like a gobo back here with a bunch of panels kind of on stands, and I'll sort of surround the vocalist with them. And it gives me enough of that, of a dead sound to be able to work with it. And, you know, I've recorded it open too, and it's fine. I like that type of sound. But
so on a vocal specifically, and maybe you could talk about voiceover, but just generally, you know, Jeff and others sternly believe you want a dead room. I mean, you want the room to add nothing to the vocal. And are you sort of disagreeing? Are you saying
I see the benefit of that as far as producing, you know, radio imaging and I mean anything with spoken word. Yeah, absolutely. I could see the benefit to that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
All right. I was just trying to start a fight, but
that's I think if I was recording VO, I would record it downstairs. I wouldn't do it up here.
Bring this up because it's come up in a couple other episodes, and then I had somebody who's a very skilled sound engineer in Dallas chime in about it. People will say that a very low-cost, easy way to get a vocal booth going for someone who's just starting out is to actually quite literally go into the closet and record in there. Do you have an opinion? Jeff, we'll start with you. Do you have an opinion on whether your closet is actually a good space to record voiceover?
No, I've tried recording in closets whenever I travel. You guys can hear me okay now, right?
Yes.
All right. Sorry about all that. When I travel, I've gone to hotel rooms, and I've tried to set up a variety of, you know, acoustic situations using all the upholstery in the hotel, and I had very little success. What I found is you need some space around you, you don't want clothing like right on top of you because you're going to sound muffled, I guess. So the closet's fine as far as deadening the potential room reflections or blocking any sound from outside from getting in, but you still need to carve out some kind of a space where you can work, where you can move your arms around, and the microphone is in that. And that's the only way to get a closet or crawling under blankets in a hotel to sound decent. It's possible to do. I've started using a tent, a little kid's tent that I said that I carry with me now when I travel.
I posted pictures
of luck doing the closet thing. It'll sound boxy, or sometimes it sounds muffly, or there's, you know, maybe a kind of a weird sort of reflection of some type. I've just never had good luck doing the closet thing, so I avoid it.
I've had a couple people say that they use it as an easy space. Others say it's a terrible idea, but
there's, I think, obviously, if it's a big closet. I think if it's a big closet, you could, you know, you can maybe make it work, but most homes don't have, you know, these guys don't have these big walk-in closets. It's, you know, probably a standard bedroom closet of some type, and, you know, you've got, like, the drywall, and it's just, I haven't had good luck with it.
The thing I always do is you clap your hands. When you do that, you immediately hear your room reflections. There's a ton of them in this room. In a closet, you sound like you're in a closet. And you're going to sound like you're on a closet on the microphone, too. And if you step out of the closet and you go in your room, there's a lot of room reflections. That also will be an unusable voice track. So you need to spend a lot of time carving out a proper space if you want to use it, you know, on a regular basis.
Let's move over to some software solutions now. We kind of talked about hardware, mics, outboard gear, preamps, and all that. Obviously, if someone's going to work in this field, whether it's on the production side or the voiceover side, they need a piece of software to record into or mix with. Steve, we'll start with you this time. What are your opinions on what people need, should, could have? Are there any rules? Yeah. You know, what are your thoughts on that for someone getting started?
I mean, it's all what you're comfortable with. All of this software basically does the same thing. You know, it's a way to get your sound either in the computer. It's a way to edit the sound and process it, whatever. It really comes down to where do you feel most comfortable. I've used everything. When I really started getting heavy into music production, I moved to Ableton Live. I was doing the Ableton Live and Pro Tools thing for a while. Then I dropped Ableton Live because I was kind of like, just didn't feel right anymore. And I just said, I'm just going to keep everything in Pro Tools. Did the Pro Tools thing. Then Pro Tools didn't feel right anymore, and I switched to Logic. And now I use Logic. And Logic, for me, I feel like I found what fits me best. You know, it was a kind of a natural fit when I moved to Logic. But I could go back to Pro Tools, I could go back to Ableton Live, I could do the same exact thing, and I could churn out the same exact result. Because I think once you know the basics of how all these things work, you could really use any type. It's just a matter of, you know, getting familiar with navigating the menus and that sort of thing. But as far as, you know, mixing and producing and all that stuff, once you know the basics, you can pretty much use any software. And then it just comes down to a personal preference, which one you feel most comfortable in, which one helps you work quicker, things like that. So I think it's just experiment. Try a couple different things and just see which one matches your particular style or workflow best and run with it. You know, like I said, once I discovered Logic, and my main bread and butter is I'm a composer. I write music for a living. And I need to do it quickly. And Logic, for me, I'm the quickest in Logic. When it comes to putting together a track, I'm about twice as fast in Logic than I am in Pro Tools. So that's why.
Let me expand on that real quick. And Jeff, I'll go to you after this. For somebody that is sort of young at this, maybe, you know, you got a lot of radio people too that are, you know, I'm a program director, I'm the morning guy, I clean the bathrooms, and now I got to be the production guy at the station. Do you have a thought on what might be the easiest place to start? Like which DAW, which audio editor is maybe the easiest one to start out in?
I'd say Pro Tools.
Really?
Yeah.
You say that Pro Tools would be easier to get going than Audition or than Reaper or any Logic, any other one?
I think so. When I look back on, you know, the years and all the different things, and I only brushed it on a couple of the DAWs I've used. I mean, I've used them all. When I look back on it, I remember Pro Tools. I remember very distinctly how excited I was that I was producing promos in it the same day I got it. I just remember it just was easy because everything was right there, was laid out really well. Editing audio was really quick, and I think, you know, personally, I think Pro Tools is the best way to go if you're going to be chopping up audio and putting promos together and things like that. I don't like it so much for MIDI-based stuff, but I think for radio imaging, I think Pro Tools is really a winner.
I'm actually surprised that you said that. I thought maybe you would. I just didn't think you would say that. I absolutely agree. And that's a guy coming from a guy who used Cool Edit for years. Cool Edit is extremely simple and basic. And then
And I started my broadcast career using Cool Edit. And you would think that that was where, you know, that's. I really think Pro Tools felt easier and more natural to use.
Now, I'm not like you, though, because I actually try and go over to other DAWs from time to time. Like, I broke out. I bought Reaper a while back and tried to use that. And then the new Audition, I have that. And I've tried to use other things. But getting into them is more difficult for me than it was when I first got into Pro Tools. So I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
But the price tag's a little tough, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a difference. I think the best bang for your buck, as far as what I use, I think is Logic. If you're, excuse me, if you're looking for something that has, like, just everything ready to go, like, let's say you have no money to buy plugins. You just have enough money to buy a DAW, and that's it. If you buy Logic, you're going to spend $199, I think, on the App Store, and you're going to get everything you need to create, whether radio imaging or to create a soundtrack. It's right there. And that is one of the things that impressed me the most is the built-in sounds that came in Logic are phenomenal. I mean, the EQs, the compressors, the everything, it's just top-notch. It's like third-party quality.